こんにちは。
こんにちは。
今日は特別編なので文字起こしのテキストを同時リリースしています。ギタージャパンの田口祐介さんです。イエイ。
どうも、お久しぶりです。
そう、会社名は変わってるけど去年の5月にアストロスケールの田口さんとして出ていただいて
そうでした。
2回目の登場ですね。
はい、ありがとうございます。
前回は多分私はすごい妊娠してたと思うんですけど。
そうですね、う
ん、もう変わっちょっとほっそりした
、はい、もうなんか立ってらっしゃって、
そう、はい、歩いていますね。もう転職されたってことですよね。
はい、その通りです。まあ実はその間にももう一社挟んでるんですけど。
おすごい。
Oh, can you tell us about that?
That actually I left Astroscale in July last year. And after that I joined a company called Space BD. And this company is concentrating on commercializing space, starting with the International Space Station.They've already have contracts with JAXA to be the private, a commercial service provider for satellite launch from the International Space Station, and also providing services to realize experiments on the ISS. So they're doing a good job so far.
Wow.
But you left?
Yeah.
And what were you... was there something particularly attractive to you in robotics?
Well, as a child, I always loved robots and space. You know, they're a perfect match, especially in Japan. There are so many animes, and the first anime in Japan was about a robot in space. So as a child myself, I watched Gundam, grew up watching Gundam, and of course in Star Wars, you know, they have lots of robots there. So I always loved robots, and I wanted to stay in the space industry. And I found this article about this company called Gitai. They had a joint research project with JAXA to test their robots in a mock-up of the ISS to see if they can replace some of the crew tasks that the astronauts do on board. And they did a good job from the beginning. And they did a press release about that. And I thought, wow, there's a company doing robots in space. Cool. And unfortunately, I left Space BD, and I contacted the CEO through LinkedIn. And said, you need someone like me. And a month later, I joined them.
Wow.
Well, you have... a lot of experience and knowledge in what the astronauts actually, the kind of tasks they perform on the ISS, right?
Exactly, yeah. So the experience that I had working with the astronauts, understanding what they do on the ISS, and the difficulties you encounter when you try to send something to the ISS, that's really helping me a lot right now.
Is Gitai an acronym?
Oh, well, I get that question very often, but actually it's a term that comes from an anime called Ghost in the Shell.
Oh.
Yes. And
Oh, that's what it is. Well, it was like, all caps, I was like,
that
maybe
was such a gaijin question, no?
I don't think so. There's a lot of cool backronyms, too. Like, maybe it still stands for something.
Yeah, you know, some people ask, is it short for Git AI? Something like that, yeah. But yeah, we took it purely from Ghost in the Shell. But unfortunately, in English, they say synthetic body, I think it was, or something like that. But in Japanese, it's called Gitai. That's where it's from.
It's a really cool name. どっかの記事で、その宇宙飛行士一人が宇宙で1時間作業するのに500万円ぐらいコストがかかるけど、これだったら100分の1みたいなのを見たんですけど。
おお、ありがとうございます。はい、まあそれはもちろん目標ですけど、おっしゃった通りですね。今例えば宇宙飛行士に1時間なんか作業していただくってなると、もしその正規のにその請求サイトがですね、1時間あたり5万ドル、550万円ぐらい請求されるので、まあなかなか。じゃあこれちょっとやってよっていう気軽には言えないですよね。その上、何かその実験を、してもらういただくってなると、1キロあたり、300、3万ドル打ち上げにもかかるので、例えば10キロぐらいの 実験機材を作りました。それを打ち上げて宇宙飛行士に例えば10時間ぐらい作業していただきました。でその実験結果も、地球に戻してもらいました。ってなるとね、あっという間に1億円かかるんですよね。
うん、
そうなるとなかなかね、手軽にじゃあこれやってみようっていうことにならないですよね。まあそういうこともあって、現在やっぱりその、ね、薬品会社さんとか、あとバイオ関係といった、まあ、比較的その潤沢にその資金がある業界の方しかなかなか宇宙ステーションそういった目的で使えてないっていうのが現状がありますね。
YouTube にビデオが何個か上がっていたのも拝見
した
んですけど、ちょっと最初にびっくりしたのがジッパーを開けてるところ、うん、私ロボットのこと何も詳しくないので、こう生物基準で考えちゃうんですけど、はい、まあ、息子とか見ててもコンセントを引っこ抜くとかっていうのはまあ結構単純でも、うん、ジッパーを開けるって結構すごいなって思っちゃったんですけど。
いやー素晴らしい、いいところついていただきましたね。世の中でまずね、最近のちょっと流れとしてロボットに AI とかを積んだらもう何でもできるんじゃないかっていうちょっとした変な期待があってあるんですけど、実はですね、AI って確かにその、認識する。例えばこれは猫ですよとか、これは赤ちゃんで、なんか笑ってるとか、そういう認識するっていうことに関しては、確かに繰り返し訓練したらね、ディープラーニングとかでできるようになったんですけど、物理的に何かを操作するっていうのは正直なかなかできなくてですね、例えば本当に簡単になんかボタンを押すっていうだけでも、2時間ぐらい、すごいとんでもない時間かけたらできるんですけど、それでできましたって言えるかっていう話ですね。人間だったら1秒でできるのに。それで、まあ、今おっしゃっていただいたそのジッパー開けるっていうのは、実はその対象物も、形が変わる、非常に柔らかい、
ポーチみたいなやつですよね。
まあ、バッグみたいな、はい、開けてるんですけど、それも実はAI でやろうとするともうできないんですよね。まあ、日本はそのファクトリーオートメーションって言って工場の自動化でロボットがいっぱい活躍してますけど、あれは限られた環境で決められた動作を繰り返してやるっていうことはもうすごい優れてできるんですよね。
うん、
ただ仮にその例えばその物を掴むロボットがあったとしたら、その掴む位置がちょっとずれたとか、あとなんか色がちょっと変わったとかだけでなった瞬間にですね、もう認識できなくなってしまって、もう違うものっていう認識になっちゃうので、ロボットとして、うん、でもう分からなくなっちゃうんですよね。だからそのためうちの会社が開発したロボットは遠隔操作、
うん、
まあ、オペレーターが常に裏にいるんですよね、
うん、
でその人が操作してやっていると。そうなるとああいう柔らかいもの、まあ、もう掴んだ瞬間形が変わっちゃうので、AI でやったらもう多分その瞬間にああ違うものって言ってもう動けなくなってしまうんですけど、人間のその認識とか操作があれば別にそんな全然関係ないので、遠隔操作でロボットを操作するっていう手法を取り入れています。
They had similar issues trying to automate manufacturing in the Tesla factories where they tried to have robots do things like run a cableAnd it's like kind of wiggly and weird. And a human can just grab that and just put it where it needs to be、mm-hmm. right away. But sort of the unpredictable nature of these like bags and things、mm-hmm. is really difficult for software.
Exactly.、just like I mentioned before,、if you introduce AI into a robot, it's easy to、program it to do something repeatedly in the、mm-hmm. same exact、environment or conditions.But the moment that conditions slightly change,、mm-hmm. The AI can't recognize it anymore.、Mm-hmm. It becomes a whole different、environment.
Right.
And it, when you're handling、soft objects, like, just like you mentioned, wires, you、mm-hmm. know, they just go all over the place. And it's、yeah. like a jungle in there. 、
yeah.
And for a person, it might be easy to understand. Okay, this wire goes here, and there's lots of wires in between, but I'll just make it go through.、Mm-hmm. But、for a robot, it's terrible. it's、yeah. a disaster.
They must have a lot of difficulty、reproducing the situation. So for image recognition, you can tell the machine if it's right or wrong in a virtual environment, you know? And then so you can repeat that process very quickly because it's all virtual. But as soon as you have a bag, we can't simulate the bag.
Exactly. Right?
So we can't train the AI because you'd have to have it there physically with the bag, taking as much time as a person would.
And it just there's just infinite possibilities.
Yeah.
And bags are weird.
Yeah. Wires and things. Yeah. But that's another reason why it's difficult to have a household robot doing chores. So actually, you know, iRobot has their Roomba, but that's an amazing invention, actually.
Yeah.
そのオペレーターの人は VR のヘッドセットをつけてるのを見たんですけど、はい、その操作は操作する側っていうのはこうどれぐらい難しいものなんですか？
まあやっぱりそのいきなりやってできる例えば我々がその YouTube に上げてるデモ画像動画とかはあの通りいきなり初めて使う人がやろうってことは正直できないです、ですからある程度その慣れとか訓練とかは必要ですけど、まあ、それさえやれば誰でもできるっていう、まあ、ただ、そうですね、まだ今のところその、我々はちょっとコクピットって言い方してるんですけど、その操作する場所ですね、まあ主にうちの社員が操作するように作ってるので、まあ、正直僕がそれ入ってもちょっと窮屈なんですよ、サイズが合わないっていうのはあったりするんで。
あ、そっか、はい、ラグはどれぐらい起きるものなんですか？その例えばこっちで操作員がボタンをポチッとした時に宇宙でポチッと押すまでの時間っていうか。
いや今ねめちゃくちゃいい質問ですね。
やった。
特にやっぱりそれよくですねこの業界ではレイテンシーって言い方するんですけど、まあ、それどれぐらい その遅延があるかですね、例えば操作してその操作の結果が、出るのがその数秒後、その結果が見えるのも数秒後とかなってくると、正直言ってその遠隔操作ってあんまり有効じゃなくなってくるんですよね。特にその距離が遠くなればなるほど、もう必然的にその光の速さが限界ですから、例えば月面でもですね、やっぱり数秒のその遅延ってありますし、その火星とか行ったらもう本当10分ぐらいになってしまうので、それを遠隔操作でやるって言ったらもう正直めちゃくちゃな話ですね。それで我々がそのオフィスでやってる分にははっきり言ってゼロです。ほぼゼロですね。で、ISS でしたら、地上から400キロなので、正直、それぐらいの距離だったら、ほぼゼロなんですよね。ただ、残念ながら、宇宙ステーションは、ティダレスっていう、人工衛星があってですね、そこを中継して、ヒューストンに行って、ほんで、ヒューストンからまた日本に来るっていうのをやってるので、ちょっと中継があるので、必然的に、片道 0.9 秒ぐらいの、遅延があるんですね。だから往復2秒ですよね。だから実際はそういう環境の中で、どれぐらい遠隔で、まあゆくゆくはですね、その実際に宇宙ステーションに打ち上げるってなってくると、我々もその遠隔だけではちょっと全部できないだろうっていうことで、本当に簡単な操作に関してはそのオートメーション、まあ、AI とかですねを導入して、両方半遠隔半自立で の操作を想定しています。
組み合わせるということか。
はい。
There may be certain tasks that are extremely repetitive, you know, like rotating a cylinder for an experiment or something, where the robot could actually...The robots are capable of holding things very still as well, so they can serve as platforms for conducting experiments on their own. Like, have you guys considered?
That's exactly what we have in mind right now. Oh. And like the example I raised before about the soft bags, where you know it's difficult for AI to do, will keep room for human recognition. So, for example, grabbing the bag.Or maybe placing the hand so it's in reachable position for a cable or something. that we'll leave up to the person to do. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, grabbing the cable and pulling it out, maybe that we can do that with AI.
Mm.
Just like you mentioned, it's a repetitive task.
Yeah. Do you record what the human motions are, maybe? So like the human could do something, and then you'd instantly have a map for the computer to do the same movement?
That's a very good idea, and that's something that we're thinking about implementing in the AI, yes. Mm-hmm. Because if it's something that's also repetitive for the human,
mm-hmm.
The robot might be able to recognize that and do it mm-hmm. by itself.
Mm-hmm.
レイテンシーに関して、その作業してる側の忍耐力も結構試されますよね。
ああ、そりゃそうですね。
ね、私みたいなせっかちな人だったらもう、はい、いいってなっちゃいそう。
実際はやっぱり宇宙ステーションでどうなるかっていうのをソフトウェアでいろいろいじってですね、その2秒の遅延を模擬してその同じ作業をやったりしてるんですけど、
うん、
やっぱりその多分そのそうですね、オペレーター側のその忍耐もありますし、その結果が自分が動作した結果がどうなったかっていうのを見るのもその時間がかかりますから、
うん、
どうしてもやっぱり例えば10秒でできたものがその倍とか3倍の時間かかってしまいますね。
うん、
Starlink, well, SpaceX has launched parts of their Starlink network, which is expected to be completed some point next year, and that's expected to reduce latency to like.Something crazy, like 4 milliseconds or mm-hmm. something. And it seems like that would be, well, low enough to operate.
Oh, definitely,
robots.
Yes. And actually, we've did a test between our San Francisco office and Tokyo to see how much latency we'll have and how much we can reduce that latency. And between that distance, about, let's see, about 8,000 kilos or something,we were able to reduce the latency down to 65 milliseconds, so almost nothing. Yeah, it's barely recognizable. So in reality, between the space station, 400 kilos, it's almost nothing.
Yeah.
So if we have a different way of communication between the ISS and ground, the actual latency could be reduced down to zero.
Are there any plans to install some better equipment on the ISS for that purpose, or...
Installed new in terms of new equipment, I'm not sure, but there are other alternatives available in the market right now, and we're in talks with a company to launch our robot to the ISS, and they're working closely with another company that's providing that kind of service, antenna sharing.
Yeah. Would you just buy a seat, like you just buy a seat on the spacecraft? You know, like Russia launched that, you know, the Terminator thing that Russia
yeah.
launched?
We know, we're aware of that.
They have
much.
Videos of that thing with, you know, dual wielding pistols
exactly,
and just
yeah.
lighting up targets. uh-huh. It's unbelievable.
It's crazy.
But they just shoved that thing into a Soyuz like an astronaut or a cosmonaut and just sent it up there. Uh-huh. And that thing is super freaky.
Yeah, it is actually. Yeah. And another funny thing was that it was launched with the original configuration, so it had two legs. So
yeah.
we were like really interested, like, wow, how are they going to use those legs on board?
yeah, that's so true.
And the sad story was it was just strapped to a wall the whole time I was on the station. So,
wait, so
what the?
Why'd they send the legs then?
I have no idea.
Because each leg must weigh, you know.
Considerable, yeah.
Costs $100,000 a leg or something.
Because even with the robot that we have in our office, the arms are about 10, 15 kilos.
Mm-hmm.
So legs, I mean, they're probably like 20 kilos each.
yeah.
That's a good amount of cargo, you know.
太っ腹だね。
That's mysterious. Russia does stuff like that sometimes.
But, you know, they have their own launch vehicle. That's why they're able to do that.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Japan doesn't. So, I mean, there's the HTV, but it's not designed to send people up there. So we wouldn't be able to send just a robot on it. And, of course, the vehicle that the Fyodor, the robot, the Russian robot.
Yeah, it's named Fyodor.
Yeah. It was launched on it was a Soyuz rocket. But it also, I think it was a test, too, to see how fast it could dock to the International Space Station. So they had to launch it unmanned to begin with. Yeah, so it was a perfect opportunity. And unfortunately, we don't have that. So, launching something to the station actually involves a lot of procedures, especially safety assessments. And that is a nightmare.
What are the... They must have some laws or some policy about robotics on board. Or I guess it's so... There's so few robots on board that they can just...
We were hoping that there would be a set of rules or procedures to send a robot to the ISS. Mm-hmm. But just like you mentioned, there's just so few examples so far.
Yeah.
And on the Kibo module, Kirobo, from Toyota and around robot like Haro in Gundam. That's been launched to the Kibo module as a robot. But, you know, they're so small. And even like if the crew bumps into it, you know, it just floats away. It doesn't cause any damage or anything.
Is that a thruster operated?
The round robot was thruster operated, yes. It was trying to... be able to control itself, its position in microgravity, so it could do some photography and take videos of the crew operating.
Didn't we talk about it on our show a while ago? Like, it has a face, no?
Yeah.
On the screen.
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Yeah, yeah.
It's called Int Ball.
Yeah. I wonder if they could make one of those that tries to push buttons, or I guess it would just run out of air.
Well, in terms of... moving around with thrusters, they haven't built anything like that yet. But NASA already did an experiment with a robot called Robonaut, Robonaut 2. And it was launched about 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was there for quite a long time. But
it's not there anymore?
No, it was brought back because it malfunctioned. It stopped moving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was stuck for like years.
じゃあ今 ISS にロボットっていないんですか？
いや、あの、その先ほどの、あの丸いイントボールっていうのは、あの、まだありますし、本当つい最近、NASA が新しくアストロビーっていう、それこ その撮影したいとか、あとそのロボット自体にもちょっと空きスペースがあって、その実験用にいろんな人がその宇宙空間で実験したいっていう方用に、そのいろんなその装置をつけれるように空きスペースがあったりするので、それが今2台確かあるはずですね。
アストロビー。
はい、アストロビ
ー。So the Astrobot? No.
Astrobot.
What was the
a Robonaut?
NASA one? A Robonaut?
Yes.
Why isn't an Astrobot or Cosmobot or but yeah, Robonaut. I think I've seen a video of that thing moving on the outside of the ISS. Is that right?
I don't think so. I don't think it's ever been out into the outer space. But maybe you have it confused with another robot. It's called Dexter. It's sort of like an attachment to the
Canada
arm, yes. And it does more detailed operations.
Yes. 見た目は面白い、Dexter は。
The robot Gita is developing, would it do you have plans to have it operate on the outside of the ISS?
Eventually, yes, because you know, we see that when the astronauts, you know, they're on board and doing all these things, it's very unfortunate. But half of their time is dedicated for maintenance work. So, you know, trying to making sure that the ISS is working properly, cleaning up, replacing things from the toilet, which is very critical.
And the spacewalks are, you know, they're super long, they're risky.
Yes, of course they are.
You could float off, or you could get hit with a micro, you know, some debris or something. Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, they take very, very strict and careful measures to make sure none of that ever happens. But there always is a risk that, something might hit their spacesuit and punch a hole through it or something. Mm-hmm. And, well, fortunately, nothing like that's ever happened. But I'm sure you saw the movie
Gravity.
Yeah. And let me assure you, something like that will never happen. I mean, that's what the ground controllers are working, you know, 24 hours to make sure nothing like that ever happens.
And that scene was kind of weird, the way it like came all the way back around. And
well, that's like the worst nightmare, right? And しかもやっぱりジョージ・クルーニーが空気を最初に遊んでるから、あの時点でもうありえないけどね。
あれも、はい、実際ありえない。あんなことは絶対許してくれない。
あとサンドラ・ブロックが宇宙服を脱いだら、下もうタンクトップとセクシーショーツみたいな。
いや。
まあ、あれはね、ちょっと現実的じゃないにしても、そっか。
These robots on the outside of the ISS,、mm-hmm. are there some grabbing points on the outside?That are designed for robots?
Well, not exactly for robots, but when the crew do EVA, extravehicular activity in their spacesuits, they have to grab onto something. Mm. Right. So actually there's handrails all over the ISS. Ah. So we could just use that.
On the inside as well, the same
kind of...
Of course,
as well.
Mm. So to do the robots would... They can't walk around in the ISS, right? So they would...move like monkeys, like with the handrails?
That's a very good point because, you know, when we invite people to come to our office and show a demonstration of our robot, you know, they, you know, immediately point out the feet. Yeah, right now we just have wheels.
Yeah.
So they could easily move on flat surfaces. Mm. But of course, you know, we won't have that when we have a space robot. And we're thinking of having like spider legs, sort of say. Like two or three of them, so they could grab onto things in the ISS and move around and stable itself to do operations.
How would you control the spider legs through the
virtual? We're thinking maybe another operator concentrating on the legs and another concentrating on the upper torso.
Would it kind of be like if you took the 上半身 and just took it, copied it, and pasted it on the bottom?
Like very good point. Yeah, that's another idea we have.
And then you have two operators that can be trained the same way.
Yeah.
And they work the top and bottom.
その二人のチームワークがめちゃくちゃ重要ですね。
まあ、間違いなくそうですね。
They're like married.
Yeah. 一心同体じゃないと、まさに。
まあ、実際は多分、片方が動いてるときは片方が動かない。にしないと、
めちゃくちゃになる。
ちょっとめちゃくちゃになると思う。
That makes sense. You know, some animals move like that naturally, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, they kind of move one side and then move the other. So.
しかもすごい素早く動くわけじゃないですもんね。
あ、もちろん。そんなことをしだしたら多分ぶつかるとか、ね、大変なことになっちゃう。リスが出てきて、ダメって言われると
思います。Did you see that news, came out a few days ago about blood clots in astronauts?
On astronauts? I haven't seen that article yet.
So apparently...Being in zero Gs increases your risk of blood clots quite significantly. They found a blood clot in one astronaut's neck, and they had to take anticoagulants for the remainder of their stay on the ISS. They haven't revealed which astronaut it was, but fortunately they had those drugs on board and you know nothing happened. But once you're on those anticoagulants, if you bump your arm or something, it's just going to...You know, you can't clot anymore. So they had to be very careful with that astronaut for the remainder of their stay. And then they went through all the scans of other astronauts and they started finding other blood clots.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So apparently, I don't know, don't send smokers up or, you know, your risk of blood clots seems to be...significantly higher if you spend a long time in zero G. And they're just finding out about this, so it's not, they're not completely sure what's going on yet, but that may increase the demand for robotics if we're looking at the silver lining in all this.
Well, I could sort of imagine how that might happen because when you're in zero G, you know, gravity doesn't pull you down. So the same thing with your blood. Mm. You know, you don't have pumped up feet at the end of the day because your heart doesn't get that tired.
Mm.
And since, you know, your heart can send the blood in your body to every part of your body almost equally the same. So, you know, the heart doesn't have to work so hard 24 hours a day. So eventually, I could imagine maybe that the blood pressure might go lower when you're in space, and that might cause some clotting of the blood in some parts of the body. Maybe,
Yikes!
Maybe the blood just hangs out in the same part of your body for too long, you know, because you're just not getting that exertion because you're, you know, flexing your muscles moves the lymph in your body and kind of forces things to circulate. So maybe, you know, they're just floating around. Maybe they just need to exercise more.
Mm.
Or maybe it's worse than that.
Well, they do exercise 2 hours every day. So I'm sure that would help, but...
Yeah, the rest of the time you're just, you know, you're just floating around.
Yeah. その sci-fi の宇宙映画とかを見ててもロボットさえいればこんなことになってないのにみたいな大体の映画でそうじゃないですか、
はい、
だから、まあ、そのブラッククロットの話も、まあ、現実的なリスクとしてそうだけど、まあ、ロボットが代わりに活躍できるとか、まあ、コンプレメントできるようになればかなりそのコストの問題だけじゃなくて体とかそのリスクのまあ、体への負荷とかリスクも軽減できるっていうことですよね。
そうですね。まあ、我々が見るそのロボットの役目っていうのはやっぱその人が行けないところに行って作業するとか、うん、人がやると非常に危険なことをできる、そういうとか人間の能力を拡張する、まあ、それがロボットの役目かなっていうふうに考えていますので、
うん
まあ、それこそ船外活動ですね。宇宙服着て宇宙飛行士にしてみれば確かにすごいしんどいんですけど、一方でやっぱりその宇宙空間に行けるっていうのは多分めちゃくちゃ面白いと思うんですよね。実際本当に地球も自分の目で本当に、ね、そのなんかもうガラス一枚を通してですけど見れるので、そういう楽しみを奪っちゃう可能性があるっていうのはちょっと申し訳ないんですけど、一方でやっぱりその船外活動をするっていうのはもう非常に危険が伴いますし、そのためにの準備っていうのはもうすんごい時間と労力、まあ、お金がかかっていますので、まあ、それだけでもそのコストを下げるっていう意味では非常に有効だっていうふうに考えていますし、まあ、今は当面宇宙に集中していますけど、いずれはやっぱりその地上でもこの技術は活用できると思ってますし、
うん、
実際そうやって使ってくれないかっていうお問い合わせいろいろいただいていまして、
うん、
例えばまあ、日本では特に大きな話題になるやっぱその原発の解体とかですね。はい、やっぱ放射線量が高いところっていうのはちょっと人間が入れるところじゃないので、
うん
まあ、それこそロボットを使ってその、原発の解体とか、あと深海とかでの調査とかですね、
うん
はいまあ、そこも人間が生身では絶対いけないので、そういうところでロボットを使っていろいろできないかっていう話はいろいろしていますね、
うん、なんか介護みたいなことも記事で見た気がしたんですけど、なんか
そうですね、はい、
どういう使い方を想定している感じですか？
いや、我々がその介護をやるっていうことは全く想定してないです、
ね、あ、なるほど。今の
ところ、はい、宇宙介護in the future way in the future
maybe operations like surgery that might be possible.
あ、そうかそう、that's true.
But you know, working around peopleIt's very, very difficult because you can't expect everything. It's, you know, that's the difficulty we have with robots working in households. There's just so much variables that you can't cover everything.
You mentioned the latency to Mars making, you know, remote operation of the robots from Earth infeasible. But on the Martian surface, or perhaps on the lunar surface, you could have an operator there pilot a machine into, let's say, one of those moon caves, or to do construction work or something outside of a habitat on the Martian surface. I mean, are you guys thinking about those opportunities?
Or? That's exactly what we're thinking of. And even now, NASA, well, and JAXA announced their participation, but starting with the moon, there is a new, yes, the Artemis program, but there is plans for making another space station that orbits the moon called the Gateway.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have an operator there, then it'll be close enough to do remote control operations from the Gateway on lunar surface.
Mm-hmm.
And in reality, too, when considering building the lunar base, you know, if you keep sending people down there to do the job, it just costs so much and it'll take so much time.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a robot there, you know, you could almost have it working 24 hours a day, and you don't have to worry about the radiation, which could really kill people. So there's lots of consideration right now of implementing robots more and more for space exploration. Mm-hmm. But it's just that not everyone's aware that actually, you know, remote-controlled robots can do so much right now. Because actually, you know, we're the only company that's doing it so far.
Really?
そうなんだ.
How are they controlling the... Not the Astrobot. Sorry, what is the...
Robonaut?
Yeah, Robonaut.
Our understanding is that Robonaut was more of an experiment to test autonomy.
Huh.
So see how much it can do by itself without people controlling it.
Mm.
It seemed that it was also capable of being operated by people, but the main experiment was autonomy.
Mm.
So yeah, they found out that it's very, very difficult to have a robot doing tasks all by itself.
そう、なんかそれぐらい難しい技術ってことですよね。遠隔でロボットを、
いや実はそうでもないんですよね。ただやっぱりその NASA のロボノートでやってたこととかはやっぱその研究目的でしたから、研究目的ってやっぱりその新しいことをやるとか、その論文を書くっていうことが目的ですから、本当にその新しい技術を試したりとかしないといけないですよね。
そっかそっか。
はっきり言ってその遠隔のロボットっていうのはもう昔からありますから、
うんうん、
ラジコンで子供が使えるぐらいのものですから、
うんうん、
そんなんで使ってなんかロボット作って送りましたって言ったら新規性が多分あんまりないんですよね、その研究的な観点からすると、
うん、なるほど。
だから一方で我々はやっぱ事業会社ですから、
うん、
お金儲けができないと潰れちゃうので、そうなるとやっぱりその仕事をちゃんとできる、目的を達成できるロボットを作ることに集中してますから、正直言ってそんな新しい技術っていうのはそのバリバリ使ってたりとかしないですね。
うん、
はい、もうどっちかというとその使い古された技術とかも活用してるぐらいですので、
うん、
とにかく、その仕事をちゃんと実施できるロボットっていうのを目的に開発に取り組んでいますね。
そっか、面白い。
With these robots in the future, I imagine they would be used to perform more commercial tasks rather than like the, you know, what's approved by NASA type tasks, right? Is that so? You could have if you had a robot in space, then maybe some other company could pay for time using that robot?
And that's exactly the business model that we're proposing.
Mm.
And as we see more commercial activities going on in space, there's going to be soon a demand to conduct more and more operations in space. And one of the things that we see in the near future is in-space manufacturing. Is making things in zero gravity that can only be made in zero gravity.
Mm.
And there are already some examples, like something called Zeebland. It's a type of optical fiber for communications. They say that if you make that in zero gravity, it becomes substantially more efficient for communications. So and it doesn't cost much to make it in space, and it's very light, so it's not too heavy. So you know it's easy to bring it back down to Earth. Mm. So they're saying that if you can manufacture it cheaply enough, then it's feasible to make it in space and bring it back down to Earth.
Is this like a clear tube? Little like what kind? Like a. I'm just trying to imagine what it looks like.
It's probably like a very, sort of like a tube, I guess. Yeah, but very, very
just like
thin.
A fiber optic cable.
Mm-hmm, yes.
So you just want to produce giant spools of this stuff.
Exactly,
just print money in space.
I heard that you can make like kilometers of it. And it's very, very light.
Huh.
Yeah.
It's crazy
that it financially makes sense to, manufacture something mm-hmm. in space.
Well, if you need zero G conditions, you know, you've got to be in space.
Exactly.
Much,
right? And
wow.
But the important point here is that when this idea first came out, you know, they're still have in mind that the astronauts will do all the work.
Yes. Cool.
But if we can replace all that work by robots or automation, whatever you call it, you know, we could bring down the price of manufacturing these things substantially.
Mm.
And then it really becomes feasible.
Mm.
And people, if they start recognizing that, hey, you know, making things in space doesn't really cost that much anymore, then it'll attract more attention from a more diverse field of manufacturing, not just
例えばその光ファイバーを作りたいっていう会社があって、例えばそれを誰かに依頼しようと思ったら、それはできるものなんですか？その例えば ISS の宇宙飛行士にお金を払ってとかっていうのは可能なんですか？
あ、可能ですね、はい、
あ、そうなんだ。
はい、まあ、もちろん単純にお金払えばいいっていうわけではないんですけど、今でもそういう、ことはできますね。
あ、そうなんだ。
はい、JAXA さんでも、もう10年ぐらいかな前からそのお金払えば、希望を使っていいですよっていう、そういう、制度が、有償利用っていう制度があるんですけど、まあ、やっぱりさっき一番冒頭に申したように、そのすごい金額がかかるのでなかなかできないっていう。
あ、そういうことなのか、はい、その研究目的とかじゃなくて普通に商業用目的でも全然関係なく、お金さえあれば頼める。
いや、まあ、そこはちょっと難しいところで、まあ、さっきも言いましたけど、その安全かどうかっていうのが非常に厳しくてですね、まず宇宙飛行士に危害を加えるようなことは絶対許されないですし、ISS 自体にもそのダメージを与えるようなことも絶対ダメですし、結構ですね、その条件が非常に厳しくて、
なるほど、
はい、我々のロボットもそのいずれ打ち上げたいっていうは言ってはいるんですけど、まあ、同じことを求められますから、仮にその反遠隔反自立になった時に、その自立運用してる時に本当に物にぶつかったり宇宙飛行士になんかぶつかったりしないかとか、そういうことをクリアしていかないと最終的には打ち上げれないので、実はなかなかお金さえあればいいっていうわけにはなかなかいかないですね。
なるほど、
How much does Gita's current prototype robot weigh?
It weighs, the one you can see on the web is about 120 kilos, so it's pretty heavyweight.
I actually expected it to be heavier than that.
But
I'm assuming the ones you guys eventually launch would be much lighter than that?
Oh, of course. We're thinking right now maybe we could bring it down to 50.
Wow.
Because the robot we have right now, it can't tip over. You know, we can't have that happening. So that's why it's very heavy on the bottom. It has wheels, it has batteries, and it has extra weight to keep it balanced. Yeah, that's why it's that heavy.
Would it also need to fold up in some compact way? Or like, would it be assembled by astronauts once it's up there? Or
to start with, we're assuming that we'll ask the astronauts to assemble it. Also, mm-hmm. There's these bags. They have their fixed sizes. They're called cargo transfer bags. Lots of times they're abbreviated CTBs. But they have the designated sizes, so we could only use that space that's available. So we're thinking of maybe having two of these bags and sending up in two pieces and have the crew assemble it on board.
そう考えると宇宙飛行士って本当に何でもやらないといけないから大変ですね。
そうですね。
そのIKEA みたいにこう送られてきたロボットをじゃあこれ見ながら組み立ててくださいとかっていうことですもんね。
いや、ただ彼らが一回その宇宙に行って、やるだろう仕事っていうのは全部地上で訓練を受けています。本当にその宇宙 ISS に行って初めてやるっていうことはあんまりないですね。
ただこういうふうにこう例えば外部から依頼を受けてっていう場合は初めての作業になる可能性もあるっていうことですよね。
ただ現在のその、運用方法では、その何かを、打ち上げたいのでこれお金払うからやってくれって、仮にそれが決まったとしても、最短でも、9ヶ月とか1年ぐらいかかりますから、本当にその何の予備知識もなくいきなりなんか来たっていうのは正直ないと思いますね。はい。で最悪そういうのがあったとしても、その作業ができるようにその訓練材料みたいなのを、地上の人たちは作ってそれ送ってそれを復習したりとかするっていうのはやってるので、本当にいきなりなんかわけのわからんものが来たっていうのは正直多分ありえないですね。
そっか。
So it'll almost be as if there are more astronauts on board once we have more robots up there. How can we make sure that the operator of the robot is not Steve Buscemi or not someone who is like kind of out of control?
Jack Knight.
Yeah, that's a good point. We haven't gone up to there yet. But that's something that we'll have to be able to assure.
Yeah.
確かにスペーステロリストみたいなことでしょ、だから。
Yeah. Just Buscemi from Houston or from wherever on the ground.
まあでもやっぱりそもそも、そういう能力を持ってないっていうロボットを多分うち、そういうふうに、ロボット制御するっていうか、物理的にそんな力とかが出せないようなものじゃないと打ち上げれないっていうことになると思いますね、最初は、はい、当分は、はい、So yeah, I think we'll have to assure that it's not capable of causing any damage, even if it goes haywire or if someone
But that takes controls. Severely limit the capabilities of the potential capabilities of the robot, at least the early ones.
Yeah, but fortunately, in zero gravity, you don't need much power. Because lifting things and moving things around, it's you don't need much power to do that. Right. Maybe when you have to physically turn a screw or use a screwdriver, things like that. But there are lots of electronic tools on board. You just push a button and turns things around. Yeah. So you don't actually need much power to do things in space.
I can already imagine a space horror movie where there's a robot, climbing on the walls with a screwdriver. the room and the person who operates the robot would need some kind of qualifications or certification from NASA to operate it. So if someone purchased time to rent on your machine, they would also need to purchase time with the operator as well, right? Like they wouldn't be able to send their guy to...
Oh, that's what we're hoping, yes. That would be because if the company that ordered the time wanted to have their own operator do the work, that operator would need to have training for a considerable amount of time to be able to do what he actually wants.
So you guys would sell them training.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, I don't know about that yet, but I think it would be safer for the customer to leave it up to us to do the job, or you know, they could blame it on us if something was wrong.
Yeah.
なんかいつも不思議だったのが、やっぱりこう日本のロボットってそこまで可愛い必要がなくても可愛い見た目にしてたりするじゃないですか。そのモチベーションがずっと不思議で、その海外だとあんまりそういう風潮がないから、でも擬態はこう顔とか特についてないから可愛い感じでは わざとこう可愛くしてるっていう感じではないですけど、なんかそのそれどう思います、その日本のロボットが可愛いっていう、なんかこのトレンド、トレンドっていうか、
うん、
いやそれ実はですね、結構すごいいいとこついてて、まあ、まずうちのロボットに関して言うと、そこにはまず全くお金かけてないんですよね、
うん、
まずそのできることをできるロボットを作りたいので、見た目に関してははっきり言って全く何にもしてないです、はい、まあ、結果的にああなっちゃってるっていうだけですね
なっちゃって、でもビデオ見てると可愛く見えてくるんですけどね。
いや、そう言ってくださる方はいるんですよね。
そう、すごい、なんか頑張れみたいな。
It looks really 懐かしい、like the 90s kind of robotics. You know, if it had some eyebrows on there, you know, like these ones.
カチャカチャってい
うMC みたいな。あ、でも、実は我々もその海外の人たちと話してて、あ、そうなんだっていうのをいろいろ気づいたんですけど、やっぱり日本って、その文化的にそのロボットに対してすごい親しみがある、うん、文化なんですよね、国として、うん、一方で海外って実はあんまりロボットを信頼してないらしくて、どっちかというとその、まあ、極端な例で言うとターミネーターみたいに、うん、その人に危害を加える可能性があるもの、決してそのお友達だよっていう感覚は持ってないらしいんですよね、
うん、
だから本当にそういう文化的な違いがあって、日本だから日本ではそのロボットを使うっていうことに関してなんかあまり抵抗がないけど、うん、海外では実は結構厳しいらしいですね。
ドラえもんベースですもんね、うん、こっちは。
そうですよね。だから逆にそういう過度な期待が出てきちゃうっていうのもあるんですけどねほんで実際見てみたらなんだこれみたいな
They were showing ロボコンOn TV last night, I think on NHK, they had like all these 高校生 competing to have their robots hosu, like towels and just like hang laundry, and it had to be quite precise, you know, to get the towel to hang long ways, you know, and I was really impressed with what high schoolers are doing with some of these robots now, and they're controlling them like this, you know, with the
PlayStation みたいな感じ。
Yeah, like a remote radio airplane controller type thing. But it seems like there's growing interest in robotics. They have these, what is it, robot wars or robo battle or something in the States where they've had these robots fighting, attacking each other. I don't know. I haven't seen anyone controlling them with VR yet, but it seems like that might be the most precise. Like, have you guys tried with one of these standard controllers? Like, that's not good.
Actually, we do use that. Oh. Sometimes, you know, when we just want to move the robot around, we actually use one of those PlayStation controllers, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when we want to do more complicated things, then that's where the operator comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So the VR technology, are you guys using like one of these mass market like Oculus or HTC?
Yeah, we are. Oh, we're always testing these all new kinds of head mount displays and see what works best. But we also have a good team of softwares working on the VR and the user interface too, because our robot has 2 eyes. And for stereoscopic imaging, so we can almost have 3D imaging through the lens, the VR lens.
Oh.
Because without that, it would be hard to do the operations, actually. Mm-hmm. So that's where VR comes in our user interface.
Mm.
So it's like, It's VR, but it's AR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's using actual imagery, but we're using VR so that the operator can see exactly what the robot is seeing.
Yeah. Mm.
Do you call that AR or VR?
It is VR, right?
But it's a real reality that's being displayed.
Mixed
it's
reality.
Not a virtual.
Yeah, but it's not augmented reality.
No, it's not.
So
mixed reality. Is probably like that, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And what are they holding some special hand controls to do this? Or
yeah, we're using a gripper right now. Our robot actually when we had our first version of the current robot, it had five fingers. But in the end, we figured out that to be able to do these operations, you don't necessarily have to have all five fingers.
Mm.
And having five fingers, actually, it's very direct because it's just like the human hand.
Mm.
Mm.
But in order to be able to control all these five fingers, there's just so much machinery inside, and it just causes so much maintenance work. And actually, it breaks very easily and malfunctions. Yeah, so you have to fix it and maintenance it almost every day to be able to have that work.
Oh, man.
And then at the end of the day, we figured out that we only need like a clipper or two fingers to be able to do most of the work. And we've made some, small adjustments, like having like a little hook on the fingers so it could do these things, that things. So, having just two fingers, it's much more easier to maintenance and fix. And when we send our robot to the ISS, we want to make sure that it could last about 2 years without minimal maintenance.
Mm.
Because if it needs to be fixed from time to time, and if we ask the crew to do it all the time, there's no sense in sending a robot to do the work.
Can you send two robots?
That's exactly what we're thinking in the end.
So
they could fix each other, and we don't have to ask the astronauts to do anything. Mm. Yeah.
So the robots would need to be designed in a way so that they can be repaired by the robots.
Mm-hmm.
That's like an interesting problem.
Yeah. その指は本当に面白いと思う。そのコンセントみたいなのを引っこ抜いてる動画を見たときに、まあこういうこの字みたいな、
はい、
あの手だったから、まさにそのロボットって言われて思い浮かぶその子供の時のおもちゃとかも、まあ、ああいう手じゃないですか。
はい、
だから、ああ、まさになんか想像通りの、なんていうの。
Like the shark grabber thing?
なんかこういうこの字みたいな、
うん、昔こういうおもちゃありましたね。こう兄ちゃん
こうやってそうそうそうそうマジックハンドみたいな。
そうマジックハンド。
Yeah. And people who have left-hand drive cars will like use that to get the ticket through the window.
Oh yeah, you know, yeah, like, see that happen. Yes. いやでも本当にあのそうなんですよ。人間の代わりに作業するのはやっぱ五指っていうのはやっぱ直感的にそう思っちゃうんですよね。だから我々も最初そうだったんですけど、結局そういうあの修理とかあの壊れやすいっていうのがあるので、最終的にその本当に2指であの落ち着いてあの、まあ、もしかしたら最終的にこう3指になる可能性もあるんですけど、大概ねこれだけでできるんですよね。
そ
っか。んであの最近はあのそのロボットが働きやすいようにその環境側を変えるっていうことも始まってて、特にあの日本ではその農家でもやっぱりその人手不足もあってですね、やっぱロボットを使いたいと。ただあの現在の農家のその畑とかの形だと、やっぱりロボットが作業するのは非常に難しいので、ロボットが働きやすいようにその木を植え直すとか、そういうのは、実際、そういう実例がありますね。はい、すでにロボットがもう作業できるようにもう気を埋め直して、あのもう本当にロボットが全部できるようにっていう。だからあの宇宙ステーションも、まあ、現在はもともと人間があの全部作業するってことを想定してるから、あの本当にその人間の器用さに頼るとこ、頼る作業が結構あってですね、もうそういうのははっきり言ってロボットにとって地獄なんですけど、我々も多分どんだけ頑張っても多分そういうのはできないですね。特にあの配線 ケーブルとかがめちゃくちゃいっぱいあって、その配線の海をこうかき分けてなんか探すとか、もう絶対無理なんです、そんなの。でも、一方で、やっぱそのゲートウェイですね。月面、月周回ステーションとか、あと、ね、月面にその基地を作るっていう話になってくると、今のそのゲートウェイもですね、実は1年のうち30日だけ人が滞在するっていう運用の想定してるんですね。
なるほど。
ということは11ヶ月、ほとんどがもう無人運用なんですよね。まあそうなるとどう考えてもロボットか、使うか自動化していかないと、もう持たないので、最初からそのロボットも扱いやすいようなインターフェースを考えていきましょうっていうワーキンググループがあったりするんですよね。
なるほど。ボタンなり何なり全てをも含めってことですね。そのロボットが押しやすいようにとか。
はい。
そっか。
ただ一方で、現在のステーションでは、宇宙飛行士が間違えて操作しないようにわざと二段階の操作必要とか、ちょっと複雑にしてるっていうのもあるんで、まあそれをどう担保するかっていう話になってくるので、まあなかなか簡単にはいかないですね。
そのケーブル、例えば ISS だとおっしゃってたみたいにケーブルがいっぱいあって、まあ写真見てもすごいじゃないですか。
はい。
それを逆になくすっていうこと、物理的に可能なんですか？
まあね、やっぱ無線技術がどんどん発展してくるから必ずしもケーブルでつながってないといけないっていうことはないと思うので、まあ、もちろんそういうやり方もありますし、まあ、最初からロボットが操作するっていうことを念頭に入れながら開発したらそのケーブルをもうちょっときれいに配線するとかっていうやり方も、まあ、いろいろあるので、はい、
So if they were、whatever the machine was that the robot would operate to produce that special fiber optic cable material, that would be designed to be operated by the robot, right?
Well, that's what we're hoping for. And yeah. that's what we'd like to talk to the manufacturer of that machine so they can develop it so that our robot could easily work on it. Yeah.
Don't make it a bag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's still okay. Don't make it too much wiring and too much. Yeah.
The wiring thing is pretty crazy on the ISS. It doesn't look like they are really trying to hide all the wires away.
Oh, not at all.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they just want to be able to access it when they need to access it, and I guess they're all just careful. But yeah, like even those robots floating around, they probably can't have anything that would catch on one of those.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like if I was in there, I would on day one just snag some wires and
I think and I think that's one thing that the crew really have to be careful about. Make sure they don't snatch one of those cables or something. And especially like the modules that they have on the ISS, the Kibo module is actually the largest. And it's really interesting because it's run by the Japanese organization. It's very clean and tidy, actually, compared to the other modules.
If you the dirtiest?
I don't know about dirtiest, but if you look at the other modules, especially the one that's dedicated for experiments, there's one called the US Lab. It's just a monster of cables. I think it's very easily you could just get stuck in one of those cables. So if we were asked to operate our robot in there, we'd probably say no. It's very, very, it's crazy, really.
How does the robot secure itself when it would be working on something?
We're thinking like the spider legs that I mentioned before. Yeah, and grabbing onto those handrails.
I see.
And actually, there are lots of these things called there are lots of slots where you could bolt yourself in, and that's really all over the ISS. So we could use those too.
Have they thought about making? I'm sure someone's thinking about this, but just making a whole separate space station. That's sort of like an autonomous factory for making all the zero-G stuff that's worth tons of money. And then just have all those companies pool in to launch this zero-G factory. And then you have your Gitai robot just making fiber optics and making stuff over here. And, You know, like, it just seems like the numbers should work for something like that fairly soon.
Oh, that's a very good point, because actually last year, NASA conducted a research to see how much demand in the commercial sector there is for manufacturing or using low Earth orbit, or sometimes it's abbreviated LEO. So LEO commercialization. And there were 13 companies that were invited to do the research. Big companies like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, and there were other companies like NanoRacks. You know, they're very big in the commercialization of space. And actually, SpaceBD, the company that I worked for before, was involved in that research too. Not not as a prime contractor, but working with NanoRacks. And it seems that, of course, there are a few conditions, but there is enough demand in the commercial market to make LEO a commercial space. And even feasible for these companies to launch their own space station for manufacturing.
Like, it wouldn't have to be that big, right? Like, you could make it sort of compact, you know, it's something you could launch with a maybe a Falcon Heavy or something, and then, you know, maybe you could assemble it in a couple parts. But, you know, they I think it was Bigelow sent up that inflatable module. It's like, that's got to be cheap, way cheaper, right? You just send something up and you inflate it, and then you know, that gives things, that creates the space for your Gitai to unfold and start making fiber optics or whatever. But the idea that there's just the space station, you know, the International Space Station, and that's it. It's kind of, you know.
And that's a very good point, because even with the safety issues involved, because there's people on there, that's why it's causing so much more difficulties, actually. If you had a station where, where the people weren't there, then you could do just so much more and experiment so much more, because you don't have to worry about damaging people.
You could do radioactive stuff.
Exactly.
You could do weird, chemical, dangerous stuff. You know, there's, I'm sure there's all kinds of dangerous chemicals that people would like to experiment with. But, you know, the humans are on that ISS, so...
And a good example is using fire. Because fire is a is a critical emergency on the ISS. So, you know, there are some experiments in very, very closed environments that use fire. But that's the extent.
So, they're always like really tiny.
Maybe just to heat things up or something.
There's like a super slow-mo video of a flame for like 1 second.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And... with the outcome of the report, NASA found out that there is maybe a market out there. So actually, they're asking for proposals right now for an actual station to be launched. And the first steps, they're thinking of adding a new module to the ISS, current ISS, as a test bed. And once they see that's feasible and it's... there's enough commercial demand, then the companies might launch their own station, maybe one module, a couple modules or something like that. And that's where we see the big money coming in for our company too. Because it's interesting, you know, there's lots of companies that have the edge technology to like to build things or create like fiber optic cables and things like that. But they don't have, none of the companies have the robotics to actually operate those machines. So, you know, there's something missing there. And that's where we come in.
And they probably, it wouldn't really be feasible for them to fully automate, you know, the machines that they have, you know. So it's like, you wouldn't have to fully automate it. You just have to make it work with this robot. That would be really cool.
Of course, if the technology catches up and we can make everything automated, I think it would be a cheaper option. But fortunate for us, AI is not that advanced yet. So there's still a few years ahead that our robot can work.
That's really cool.
What sensors are on this robot, the prototype? Is it, you have the cameras, the two cameras. Does it have sound or mic?
Oh, yeah. It definitely has sound and microphone. And it also has lots of other cameras installed right now. We're testing lots of technology to make it autonomous as possible. So we have these things called RealSense cameras. It detects distance and color. So, and we have it surrounding the robot right now, so it could see the environment around itself. So it could, we could use it for like a collision avoidance. And we've actually, you know, built some software to do that already. For example, the operator like steps on the pedal and go forward like all the way, but if it sees something, it slows down and eventually stops in front of the object. And we also have haptics on our hands. So it could actually feel what it's grabbing.
And, the operator can feel it.
Operator can feel it, yeah. It's very simple operations, but it could, the operator can feel what it's trying. Well, it could feel the force that it's getting back. And we've done enough experiments so that the gripper can grab onto like a 2-liter bottle and at the same time grab onto a potato chip.
Wow. Like... By the edges?
By the edges, yeah. Wow. Just one potato chip, yeah.
すごい.
And I don't know if we release the video for that, but yeah, we have that too.
Wow.
すごい. It works.
Potato chips.
Wow.
So there are so many different technologies involved in making this come together. It's, you know, the programming, the robotics, all these... sensors, you know, automating things, and then the constraints for the actual robot are going to be about as demanding as possible. You know, it has to be super lightweight and compact and extremely durable. And you know, if the robot damages something on the ISS, that would be a big problem too. And it's is there a harder robot to make than this?
Well, actually, you know, you brought up a very good point, actually, because that's one of the core competencies of our company. You know, there are many robotic companies out there, actually, you know, making robots and maybe autonomous, maybe remote control. But many of these companies are concentrated on one advanced technology. For example, there's a company in Japan that's... concentrating on neural optics, operations. So like connecting the brain to the robot and controlling it. And that technology itself is something I'm sure that will definitely be necessary in the future. But unfortunately, just one special technology doesn't determine the dexterity of the robot itself. The robot is almost like a car. You know, there's so many aspects to it, and bringing it all together as one whole system, that's when that actually the integration determines the capability of the robot itself, not just one special feature.
Well, you guys are trying to build an astronaut, basically. You know, it's got to be able to do all the stuff that astronauts do, and just the thought that goes into the manipulating part. But there's got to be so much in terms of like power consumption too. Like there's limited power on the ISS, right?
Of course.
So are you guys are going to be making this thing to have to use very low power
as possible? Yes, because we could go ask for lots of power, but when we do that, there will be more safety issues that we have to answer. So we'll keep it down as much as possible. And because it doesn't need so much power in microgravity, we're not going to need so much voltage or anything. Actually, the component that takes up most power is the PC, the computer part.
But like the ISS just has those solar panels, right? So there's limit to how like the total power usage.
And we have all the engineers that we need to build the robot, the hardware engineer, electronics engineer, software engineer, the engineers working on the infrastructure, the communication latency and stuff. So we have a good team that specialists that are world-class engineers working every aspect that makes up the robot. So we're able to make a whole complete robot, and that's that works.
Have you tried it? Have you operated
it? Oh, yeah, of course I tried it myself.
Oh, what does it feel like? Like, what is it?
Well,
it must be really strange, because I can't think of another situation where you have a physical avatar doing stuff when you do it.
Well, it was close enough to what I imagined. Yeah. You know, because I saw it operating and saw the guys in the office doing it. And I always thought. And we also have a monitor that shows what the operator is seeing all the time. And we use it as a demonstration for people when people come to our office. But, you know, seeing all that, I had, you know, sort of like an image of how it would feel like working in it. But it wasn't so far off from that. So it wasn't so difficult to get used to using it.
Does it feel different from just standard VR where you're in a virtual environment? You know, because it's, I'm wondering, does it still kind of feel like a video game? And if kind of, does it feel like there, maybe there aren't consequences to moving the robot, you know?
Well, in that sense, it was real. I mean, it was nothing's virtual in the,
what you see.
Yeah, well, in the head mount display, what we see. So, everything is real. So, I didn't feel like, you know, sometimes when you wear those 3D glasses, you get sick from it, you know, sometimes. But, you know, the engineers worked enough so that the operator doesn't get sick from that. And we've also tried one time to see how long the operator can work in it without getting really sick. And the longest we did so far, I think, was about 4 hours. That's a very good time. You try that watching a 4-hour movie with 3D goggles, and that'll get you crazy.
Do you test the pilots as well? Like how the pilots are progressing? You know, how long does it take the operator to become competent with the machine?
We haven't actually measured any time how gradually the pilot got better. So we, I can't answer that question right now. Yeah,
but it's many, many hours of
yes
of using it.
It must feel surreal to. I mean, if you're wearing VR and when your robot is actually in space, like that must feel surreal. Like, I mean, if that was me, it's like wow, I'm moving something in space, like right now. Actually doing
how does your brain really believe it?
I mean, personally, I would pay for it. I paid for that. So that's where, you know, we're thinking maybe that's something we could also do when we actually send our operating robot to space. You know, I'm sure it won't be working 24 hours around the clock. So we could maybe sell some time for just normal people to try it.
Maybe
even go out into space and see them look down to Earth or things like that.
Oh my God.
If you guys had one on the moon, just the humanoid, just it's just there on the moon. And then people can rent that and just walk around on the moon.
Oh my God.
I mean, you could.
That's like the best entertainment service, no?
Everyone can watch, you know, whoever it is that's operating. You know, watch the same stream too.
Oh, but that's so
kind
much
of
fun.
Being the human height and just the walking around, just the avatar experience might be interesting.
That'd be so much
fun.
That'd
be so cool.
But that would be the the only thing that robot does is walk around.
Hey, but if you know, if people are willing to pay for it, why not?
I think absolutely.
I'm sure they would be.
Yeah, I'll pay for it.
To have an avatar. Because
that's
the moon.
So weird, right? It's surreal.
Like you can turn your head.
Yeah.
And then the robot is like turning its head on the moon. It's like.
And what would be even better if you had another camera actually seeing your robot move, so it's real, you know it's real.
Yeah. That's nuts.
Do you think the humanoid form is always it's an interesting topic in robotics, because there are, I've heard the opinion, like, there's no reason for it to look like a human. It should look like what it should look like. Well, then it's like, well, the environment is designed for humans, so it should look like a human. And how much, as we change environments to suit both humans and then robots, and then over time the environment may be more built for robots than for humans. You know, you walk into a room and it's like, man, why is this chair so small? Or I don't know what would be different, but I imagine that we'll keep this, that the utility of that humanoid form is going to be really high for the near future. But I wonder if over time, as we have less environments that are built around us, maybe that will change.
You know, I'm always amazed at the good questions that you ask.
Because, thank you.
It's a very, very good point. Because just like you mentioned, currently, you know, we're trying to build a robot that can do replace some of the tasks operated by the astronauts. Mm-hmm. And because the ISS is designed for people to work on it, as a consequence, the robot becomes a humanoid robot with two arms and a head.
Yeah.
But just like you mentioned, that's not the robot doesn't it doesn't have to look like that. And but because many of the tasks on the ISS require two hands to operate the object, it has to have two arms. But a good example is, like, if people are familiar with Gundam, there's a Perfecto Jiyongu. There's a robot called Perfecto Jiyongu. It doesn't have legs.
Jiyongu.
Yeah, it doesn't have legs. Because in space, you don't need legs.
Yeah.
I mean, it feels normal to have legs because we're a human. But if you're just thinking about mobility in space, you don't need legs. You just need thrusters on your bottom. Yeah. And that was the shape of this Perfecto Jiyongu. Yeah. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It's the other way around. Jiyongu had no legs. Perfecto Jiyongu had legs.
Okay.
It was perfectly human, I guess.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah, and in the future, when we think about the best design for a robot to do its task, of course, it doesn't have to look human. Even on the moon, you know, when you think about moving on the moon or other celestial objects that with very low gravity, it's very unreasonable to have even wheels or legs, because the slightest motion upward, it just kicks you off that body. It takes so much time to get back down because there's no gravity. So in those cases, we really have to think about how to, you know, keep that robot or whatever on that body. And we might have to have thrusters all around, end up with something like that. Yeah.
I think there's a potential for, like, modularity with these robots, where, you know, you could take that same robot and then deliver it to the lunar surface with a different lower body, and then all of a sudden you'd be this super capable robot that, you know, can move better than anything else on the lunar surface, because you attach these tank treads or something. I don't know.
That's something we're also thinking about with a robot on the ISS too. Maybe switching hands for a special purpose, working on each experiment. Yeah.
なんかその今の話に関連してこう、まあ、ちょっと戻るんですけど、その例えば、まあ、人間を送るよりもとか宇宙飛行士に頼むよりもロボットの方が、まあ、安いし安全だし、で今マイケルが言ったように、じゃあそれがこうどんどんロボットの環境に合わせていって、まあ、人間の形じゃなくてもいいや、むしろ人間にとって使いにくい方にシフトしていった方が効率的にいいかもしれないとかってなっていった時に、その最初の方でおっしゃってたような、その宇宙飛行士が行くことの、その効率とかは下がるけれども、なんか人間としてのロマンとかそういう、こう行きたいみたいなっていうのとの、そのバランスっていうかでどうなっていくのかなって、ちょっとなんか哲学的な話にもなると思うんですけど、
はい、 これは特に日本ではよく上がる話題なんですよね。やっぱりその人を送るっていうことに関してはめちゃくちゃお金がかかりますし、その安全も大変だし、そもそも日本って独自の有人宇宙船がないですから、本当に そこにお金をかける価値があるのかと。それで多分はその地上でも同じ話で、その AI がとかロボットが発展すればするほど、その人間がやる作業がなくなって仕事が奪われるとかっていう話がありますけど、そんな産業革命でも全く同じの話で、やっぱりその機械が導入されて今まであった仕事がなくなったっていうのは もう歴史上ずっと起こっていることなので、今更っていう感じもするんですけど、まあ、宇宙においても同じことだと思いますし、やっぱりそのゼロから1を作り出すとか、そういうことってやっぱり今でもやっぱり当分はやっぱり人間しかできないことだと思いますので、そういうところまでその AI とかロボットができるようになったら、ちょっとそれは脅威ですけど、まあ当分そういう時代はまだ来ないんじゃないかっていう、まあ期待と100年ぐらいはまだ大丈夫かなと思うんですけど、あとそのやっぱりその未知の環境に遭遇したときに、やっぱりそれいうとこでどうするかっていうのはやっぱり人間にしか今できないことなので、ロボットにしてみたらその経験がないですし、データもないですから、もうどうしたらいいかも分からないので、もう止まっちゃうんですね、完全に。もう何もできなくなってしまうので、そういうところはやっぱりまあ、これからも人間が対応しないといけないと思うので、月面開発とか火星基地とかそういう話も、もちろんありますし、最初にその人間が行けるようにその環境を整えるのは多分ロボットがやると思うんですよね。危険ですし、その行くのも大変ですし、でも一度その環境が整ってその探検するとか探査するっていうことになってくると、人間がやって、まあ人間やらないにしても、そのロボットがそこまで行ってそれを新しいものを見て判断するっていうのはやっぱり人間が引き続きやることだと思いますので、そういうところでその人間がやっぱり人が行かないとできないっていうのは引き続きあると思いますし、あと私すごい感心したのが、前澤友作さん、元 ZOZO の社長さんがね、スペース X で月面周回 のチケット買ったと、なんで同じ乗る7人はもうアーティストばっかり選ぶっておっしゃったのは、僕すっごいこの人偉いなと思ったのがやっぱり今まで宇宙に行った人っていうのはプロの宇宙飛行士しかほとんどいないんですよね。たまたま行ってる人は、まあ、せいぜい2週間1週間か2週間ぐらいしかいないんですけど、大金持ちなんで、まあ、多分普通の人ではないんですよね。そこで本当にその純粋のアーティスト、ものづくりをしている人を連れて行ったら、どういう発想を得るのか、どういうなんかそのインスピレーションを受けるのかって、僕も個人的にすごい興味があるので、それを言い出した前田さんは偉いって思います
。Who would you want to have sent to the moon?
Personally, I would have loved if Michael Jackson was there. But of course, he's not. Yeah. But this is my personal.
Do the moonwalk?
Yeah, maybe. That would be cool.But definitely musicians, artists.
You should send Kanye. He would freak out.
Yeah.
He would come back ranting some simulations.
He's going to make, like maybe 10 new religions or something.
What would Snoop Dogg say? Like, what would some of these, like, what, it's interesting to think what certain, artists would say if they went to the moon.
Yeah.
Well, even just the experience of looking back at the Earth from outside,
Well, I think this discussion about whether, sending, are we going to send robots instead of humans or what the focus should be, if we can send this many robots for the same cost of sending one human. But in the longer view, it seems to me like if you want to send humans, then you have to send robots to lower the costs. So everyone kind of has the same. I think the solution is the same for no matter what your position is, because we just can't send a bunch of humans right now.
No,
it just can't. But if using robotics created business opportunities in space, then all of a sudden that they will, these businesses will drive down the costs of launch and of operation in space, and then everyone can go.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and even if there's not a purely commercial reason for people to go to space, mm-hmm. there'll always be entertainment and travel. There'll always be people who are saying that they'll pay the whatever it costs to get me there. And as long as, you know, people are curious.
It's the ultimate experience, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's everyone's on the ground.
Yeah.
And we stay on the ground. And there's only just a few people that can... I mean, it's kind of... You're going outside of, I don't want to say the simulation, but outside of the world... And then looking at, this is it, you know, this is the whole, it's like the Carl Sagan bit, you know, the pale blue dot, you know, every king, every dictator, every, you know, uncle, every, you know, mechanic, car salesman, whatever, everyone was just on this dot. And to get away from the dot and like look at it, like, I wish I had money for that or I could do that
too. Definitely. I mean, my dream is to look back on the Earth and see the whole planet as a whole in just one picture or thing.
あとなんか安くなったらその world leaders は絶対行かなきゃいけないことにしてほしい。
あ、それは僕も個人的に思いますね。やっぱりその宇宙に行って、あ、やっぱり国境ってないんだなとか、あの本当にその真っ暗な宇宙空間の中で唯一その青い、まあ。まあ、人間がそういうふうに進化したからだからもあると思いますけど、やっぱ美しいんですよね、すごい。それを見て本当に今まで通りのことをそのままやっていいのかっていうのを、そういうインスピレーションとか受けてほしいなってすごい思いますね。
Humans have to change their minds, I think. You know? I think to survive we need to have a stimulus to our perspective, you know, see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
The stakes are so much larger now. The world is globalized. You can't just have a fall of civilization in one small area anymore.
Yeah.
Now it's like if civilization falls, it's like the whole freaking planet, you know, whether it's a disease pandemic or nuclear war or whatever it is. So
I really hope there are intelligent aliens out there. So if I know that, then I can relax and be like, well, okay, then if we fuck it up, then まだ他にいるからいいや。
But it could take a really long time to...
もうあまりにもプレッシャーすぎて、this is so stressful because we are fucking it up. We are. And なんかもう安心したい。
Well... No.
I can't relax.
Well, you know, I'd like to hope that bringing people to space is the option to change that. Yeah. That's something I really would like to expect. Yeah.
そのさっき話してたみたいな擬態のロボットを使って、まあ、VR で自分で例えば宇宙で何かを操作するとか、まあ、首を本当に、ね、振り返るだけでも、なんかそういう経験だけでもやっぱりこうスケールが違うじゃないですか。だからこう自分が日々こう直面している問題とかがすごいちっちゃく見えるとかって絶対あるから。
People will call it fake. You know the new movement on at least. So I like watching the NASA like live streams from the ISS of the Earth, and there are re-uploads of those live streams on YouTube, and the comments, the live comments will just be like.This is Photoshop, you know, the space is fake, NASA is fake, you know, and it's constant. This is like a constant thing. I don't know if they're all bots or what, what's going on, but as more and more of the world has become aware of this idea that we live on this ball that's floating in just nothingness, surrounded by a bunch of other balls, and this whole ball moving around a ball thing. And as more and more people are exposed to that, more and more people some of them are like, I don't know if I believe all this we're on a ball thing. Maybe it's some other idea, but it's...
But, you know, I've always, even personally, I've experienced how, you know, going to a different environment and seeing where you were from the outside view. It really changes your perception of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I had that personally when when I came back to Japan, you know, living in the States for 10 years. And that was the first time that I saw myself from a different point of view.
Mm.
I saw I was not the kid in the U.S. anymore.
Mm.
I was a kid in Japan that grew up in the States. So I wasn't purely Japanese, but I wasn't purely American either. So I was like, but it helped me to understand both cultures and have a different perspective in the people who are just living there all their lives. And I'm sure the same thing will happen when people go to space and see the big picture and see that outside of their own environment.
Mm.
And when they see the Earth as just one big thing with rock, the third rock from the sun. And I don't know. I hope it's not something that's limited to people who have a considerable education or anything like that. I hope it's something that's very common for anyone. If they see the big picture, it just changes their perception of everything there.
I mean, going to the beach, like looking at the ocean, kind of gives you a similar impact. And or like, it's a stupid example, but it personally it was a big deal. But その日本で育ってる中でやっぱりこうアメリカってすごい大きい存在で、まあ、ハリウッド映画とかスタバとか、うん、こうマクドナルドなんか何でもいいけどアメリカのものをこうありがたがるって言うと語弊があるけど、まあ、すごいみたいなで育っていった中でこうヨーロッパに行った時にスタバなんてクソだみたいなことを言ってる人とかが結構いるじゃないですか、まあ、イタリアとかフランスとか行けば
あと結構アメリカが大嫌いって
人いますよね。そう、大嫌いとかハリウッド映画なんて本当バカみたいとか、それを初めて聞いた時の衝撃っていうか、自分が知ってる世界とあまりにも違いすぎて、あ、こういう世界もあったんだみたいな。だそれはすごい私が、まあ、10代の時のこう小さいエグザンプルだけど、個人的にはものすごい衝撃だったんですよね。だからその宇宙みたいなスケールとは違うけど、やっぱり外から自分の世界を見るっていうのはすごく大事ですよね。
僕もヨーロッパ行った時同じ衝撃受けました
ね。あ、本当ですか。
そしてロシア行った時もまた衝撃受けたんですね。
あ、そう、
思ったよりみんなアメリカのこと好きなんだって普通にアメリカのもの結構溢れてるので、あれって思っちゃいましたね。
そっか、やっぱ分かんない、行ってみないと分かんないもん、
ね、いや本当にそうですね。でやっぱりそういう刺激ってでなんか受けるたびに、あ、自分の世界がちょっと広がったなっていう感覚に襲われるので、それがすごい気持ちいいんですよね。それが宇宙に行ったらどれぐらいになるのかなっていうのは、すごい個人的な期待もあるので、そういうのはね、やっぱ世界中、特にその各国のトップに立っている人たちには経験してほしいなと思いますね。
そうですね。
You know, going to another country, one of the crazy things that happens is you get in this metal tube, and then it just starts flying through the sky. But if you've never been on an airplane before, imagine the difference in your perspective of the world, the earth. You know, like if you get in an airplane and you look out the window, you're moving over like mountains, like oceans, like rivers. You're flying through these clouds, you know.
It still feels like fake to me. It's like...なんかトゥーメンショーじゃないけど、その騙されてるっていうか。
My mind is blown when I'm on airplanes. I'm like trying not to pull out my iPhone and take videos of clouds. I'm just like, what? Like, I can't believe we're up here.
Yeah.
You know? But it's so uncool to be impressed by flying these days.
Why?
Because if I was reacting like that, people would be like, you know, what's wrong with this guy? Like, we're just on the airplane.
Excited.
Yeah, people don't like flying. And...
Well, I don't like flying. Well, I don't really like the airplane experience,
well, I don't
per
either,
se,
but
I like to think about その足の下、
mm-hmm.
こう、なんか透明じゃないから見えないけど、今座ってる自分の足の下ってすごいことになってるじゃんっていうのをよく考える。
People pay so much money to sit, you know, up in the 60th floor of some fancy building and eat dinner for 2 hours. You get an airplane, you're up at like 40,000 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. The meal's not that great, but
you know, well, it depends on how much you pay, right?
Yeah, it depends.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah.
That's but, great.
Yeah, the view from just airplanes is mind-blowing. And it's, like you said, sometimes it doesn't feel like it's real.
Yeah.
You know, looking out the airplane.
Totally.
It's like, is that, we're moving around this ball?
Yeah,
this
and then after whatever hours, I'm in Hawaii and it's a total different environment. And I always feel like, oh God, is this real?
Yeah, there's a weird, yeah, that feeling when you get off the plane and then it's just like, it's all just the way it was.
Yeah.
You know?
Maybe if you were an engineer and you know exactly how the airplane works and stuff, you can't really get how I feel. But because I don't understand it, it's still magical to me.
We're still monkeys, right? So you're still like a monkey got into a tube that flew through the sky, you know, 1,000 miles an hour. And then, you know, you end up in a completely different place, different climate sometimes. That's always jarring.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, I remember the first time I flew to Europe, you know, we fly over Russia and it was a daytime. So I was able to get a beautiful view of the tundra and everything. Mm. But, you know, as far as I can see, there's just mountains and mountains covered in snow. Mm. And there's absolutely no sign of life anywhere. Mm. Of course, you're very high, so you can't see that. But I'm just blasted at this beautiful view. I never saw anything like it. Of course, maybe I saw it on photos, but to actually, you know, be able to see it in real life,
yeah,
it just blew my mind. And I, you know, I just noticed that I want to see so much more. I'm missing out on so much that I haven't seen so far. And 100 years is not enough. I wish I could live longer than that. I want to see so much more.
You can't. Sorry.
No, please.
Oh, but you can't see as far, like, when you're up in that airplane and you're looking out the window, you can see the horizon, right?
Yeah, you can.
And you feel that it's round. But that I saw a map of this or some diagram explaining this. You're not seeing that far, you know, in terms of like the whole Earth. You know, if you're in an airplane and the Earth is like this and you're here, you think you're seeing out to like here or something like the half,
really far.
You feel like you're looking at half of the Earth, but you can barely see.
Yeah.
The horizon is still right here, even though you're 40,000 feet up. Mm. The horizon's like still quite close.
But 普段見えるねその範囲とは全然違うから.
Mm. The balls are weird. It's like the how much of the ball you can see, and how far away you are from the ball is like this really weird effect. Mm. You have to be almost infinitely far away to see half of the ball if it's a very large ball. But even the ISS, you know, they can't see that far
because they're just skimming the Earth.
Yeah.
Actually,
yeah, and the Earth is just that big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really want to go to the moon and see the Earth rise.
Mm.
When I first saw that photo from Apollo 8, oh, that just blew me away. Man. That was the beautifulest thing I ever saw.
They have a video of that. Have you seen the video?
I haven't seen the video yet.
So that moonrise, they took many pictures in a row, and they were all over the place. They kept moving the camera. But somebody stabilized all those images and put them together into a GIF. And, you know, stabilize it with the Earth rising. Mm-hmm. And it's now a video. I mean, some of this old Apollo stuff, like, it's made into movie footage, like, 10 years later by some guy on Reddit or something. It's crazy.
And half the population still thinks people have never been to the moon yet.
Yeah. The sunrise on Mars would be really awesome, too.
Mm.
The sun on Mars is blue. Because the sky is red.
Mm.
And it's also smaller.
Yeah, much smaller.
Much smaller. So they have pictures of the sunrise on Mars. And it's like this blue sunrise. It's really...
That's weird.
Trippy looking. It's all reversed.
Different perception.
Yeah. Mm. That's weird. 前澤さんのやつっていつの予定なんだっけ?
Probably 2023 or something.
Mm.
Is that right? And they're gonna do the high altitude launch tests with the. They're building the orbital prototype of the Starship. Are you following the Starship
spacecraft? Much.
So the Starship being built by SpaceX is a gigantic rocket.
Mm-hmm.
It's it would have more payload capacity than the Saturn V. And it, or I think the SLS as well. And it'd be fully reusable. Mm. So once the Starship is completed, it's expected that all the payload to orbit costs will fall by like 90% or more.
90%?
Or more. I mean, they get the whole rocket back. The whole thing comes back.
Of course, yeah.
And the economics work out. So if the larger the rocket is, the more sense it makes economically.
Of course.
And they would only have the fuel cost for the rocket. That's it. And it's the whole thing's made of 304 stainless, not some like carbon composite stuff. So it's cheap for them to build.
Mm.
So when did you join GITAI again?
This May.
Yes. So-ka. Can you believe this year is like almost over?
There was so much going on, especially in my life too.
Yeah,
確かに. These past 2 years have been crazy.
I bet.
And my wife going crazy too.
でも確かに, if my husband changes jobs twice in such a short time period, I'd be like, whoa.
Yeah, she is. My wife is. She's whacked out.
I mean, they're all in the same general, you know, industry.
Yeah, they are.
At least.
And it's really cool. I mean, not many people get to work on robot astronauts.
And, yeah.
And working on satellites collecting debris and commercializing space.
Yeah.
I might be the only person in the world who's ever done all this.
Yeah. 宇宙産業を渡り歩く。渡り歩きました。
You just need a humanoid robot collecting debris.
Well, actually, that's down in our path too. I mean, once we have our robot, we've proven that our robot works in outer space. We're thinking of providing just maybe the robot arm for like on-orbit servicing, where satellites like refuel other satellites or fix other satellites. Mm. And also for debris removal. So actually, we're talking with Astroscale too.
Oh, wow.
So could you have like a CubeSat with just arms on it?
I don't know about a CubeSat, but that's what we have in mind, yeah.
Just a pair of arms flying through space.
Doing something.
It's like that, you know, the 2001 A Space Odyssey pods. You know, they had the two arms up front and they could float around and fix stuff, right?
Yeah. Huh. Something like that, yeah. Mm.
Interesting. Huh.
Yeah, but I mean, that didn't end well in that movie.
It had a mind of its own. So.
Yeah. I mean, will these be coordinating with the sort of a central computer in the ISS in the future? Like, will there be some kind of, for all the AI operations in space, will they run through some central point, or you know, will there be a Skynet or a space net that would coordinate robotics? So if two robots wanted to do some coordinated movement or something,
Well, you know, if they had a dedicated network that communicates with the Earth, then the distance is not much, so it would be. I think it would be more reasonable to have that central whatever on the planet instead of space. Because it's easier to maintain. And controlled by people, too. Because, there's more automation going on anywhere in the world. But in the end, you want to keep room for it to be controlled by people because it does malfunction.
Yes.
You can't 100% rely on robots or AI to do the job.
Would you guys supply like spare parts with the robot when you send it, or would it for repairing the robot? how can you design it in a way so that there isn't a sort of a critical failure, or like a, you know, like the astrobot, no, the robonaut, mm-hmm. it became disabled, mm-hmm. right? So is there, maybe if some part of the robot breaks, the, you know, it can still use one arm, or I guess it would depend how, what failed. But.
Mm. Actually, we haven't come to that point yet. Mm. But in terms of repairing, what we have in mind is like a plug and play thing. So it's just modules, or so we could just pull it out and plug it in and repair itself easily. Mm. But yeah, if there is a critical failure, well, that's why it's called a critical failure. But I guess that's something we'll have to think of in the future. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And would you be expected to pay some deorbit cost, or if you were, like, how long would the robot remain in space? And so if you guys plan to have it work for, you know, 2 years or 3 years, at the end of that, I guess you have to buy a round trip ticket for the robot, or
if we want the robot to come back to Earth, then we have to pay a round ticket. But we could also ask for it to be just disintegrated.
Mm.
Yeah, because that's what happens to most of the things that are sent up to the ISS. Many things are kept in storage, but in the end, they're put into one of the resupply vehicles, and it just burns up in the Earth's atmosphere when it comes back. And because there's only two vehicles right now that can come back to Earth. It's the SpaceX and the Soyuz.
Mm.
All the other ones, they just burn up in the Earth's atmosphere as garbage. Wow. Yeah.
So cool. Wow.
And of course, it costs so much more to bring it back down safely.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
これ一回送ったら何年ぐらい同じものを使い続けるっていう想定ですか？
まあ、できればやっぱ2年は最低したいですね。例えば今、ISS に行く宇宙飛行士って、まあ、基本的に半年か6ヶ月滞在するんですけど、それと同じ長さだったらあんまり意味ないんで、ロボットを送っていく、はい、それでそれより長い期間、あまりそのクリティカルなそういう修理とかなしで、2年間動けるように開発を進めています。
なるほど。
Would the robot have batteries on it, or would it be plugged in for operation?
Well, actually, we would like to have batteries on it, because I'm sure it won't be able to have be connected to the ISS all the time.
Mm.
But that's another safety issue there on the ISS, having batteries. That causes so much more trouble. So the first demonstration mission, we're thinking of one without batteries.
So that, yeah, you need the batteries to get the mobility sort of.
Exactly,
the,
yes.
Yeah.
So cool.
大変なんです。
制約がめちゃくちゃあるから。
制約本当に大変なんですよ。
ね、それをクリアしつつ作業もしなきゃいけないという、
はい、まあ、それもあってそういう、その安全審査を通過しないといけないっていうのがあるので、
うん、
それも結局その ISS で何かやるっていうことに対するハードルにもなってるんですよね。やっぱり一般的ではないので、あ、実はこういうことをやりたくてお金もあるんですけどって言っても、じゃあこれこれこれこれこれこれこれこれこれ全部これちゃんと準拠してくださいねって言われても、ってそれするためにはまたすごいお金がかかるので、結局なんか100万円のものを打ち上げるのに1000万円以上かかっちゃったとかっていう、結構大変なんですね。
大変だね。
If they had an unmanned orbital manufacturing space station thing, and you could sort of bypass a lot of these human presence considerations, I think that would be incredible for business and innovation. Because, I mean, nobody wants to hurt the astronauts.
Of course not.
But, like, on some level, it does feel like, I don't want to say that, I mean, obviously the astronauts are not 迷惑. But it does obstruct. There's just so much to consider when that, yeah. you know, like, if you're trying to do something that may not require astronauts. So, mm-hmm.
mm. so you said NASA is considering その commercial のモジュールを追加する?
はい。もうあの今それのための、提案書を募集していますし、
そのタイムラインってどんな感じになるんですかね。その 何年後とか。
ちょっとはっきりとした数字は難しいですけど、あの例えばそのナノラックスという会社はですね、もうすでに来年にそのための最初のデモンストレーションミッションを実施するっていう、
うん、
あのもう宣言してて、彼らはその新しいモジュールとしてロケットの第二弾をあの再利用するっていう構想を挙げてて、
うん、
まあロケットって基本的にほとんど燃料なんですよね、うん、燃料タンクなんですよね。それを全部枯渇してあのドンガラだけになったら、それを、ちょっと工事して、そのステーションみたいなの使い方ができるようにちょっと工事すると、そのための、実証試験を来年実施するって言ってますね。
面白い。
There's so much coming up with space stuff. And then in the next like five years are going to be absolutely nuts. Definitely. There's so many launches. Like just beginning next year, it'll all start happening. I mean, there's so many Starlink launches on top of the normal SpaceX manifest, and then you have all these so many new companies now, like these tiny rocket companies like Rocket Lab, and then you have China's launching a bunch of stuff now. And
God, you know, Astro scale, 頑張ってって感じ。ゴミが。
そうなんですよね。
There are like hundreds of space companies. And the number of launches next year, I think, will be more than double any year previous. And it'll just get crazier and crazier. You know, there's Blue Origin, which is going to be the Jeff Bezos company, yeah. who's going to be mm-hmm. launching all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to be nuts. And with the CubeSats and these sort of shared payload launches, you know, it's really, there's the costs have come down so much for launching stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good thing because, you know, there's growing demand to do things in space.
Mm-hmm.
But the biggest hurdle to get to space is to go to space.
Right.
Still. It just costs so much to go to space. Yeah. Yeah. Especially when there's people involved. But thanks to all these launchers and rockets that are developing, it's getting cheaper and cheaper just to get to space. But of course, it still costs the most. I mean, it's the biggest cost factor to get to space. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. These systems they're working on for the, I mean, they're developing some new launch vehicles. The SLS has been under development for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, does anyone even know, like, I don't think they're even sure that they're going to use the SLS still. I think they're, it's your planning too. But,
well, the Artemis program, it's based on the SLS.
Yeah. But, yeah. And now they're saying to launch the SLS one time will cost like $2 billion or something. Absolutely ridiculous per launch. And the SpaceX Starship rocket would cost something like less than 10% of what the SLS would cost. Maybe even less than that. So will the public support launches for billions of dollars each? For the Artemis program, it's kind of become a controversial issue in the United States now. It was like, well, we spent so much money on this thing.
Yeah.
But it costs so much more money to launch it.
もう sunk cost の問題になっちゃう。
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah. But all the other vehicles don't have that problem. That's kind of NASA, they just had these... plus cost contracting, and these things would just balloon.
But, you know, this is something actually that we asked the agencies to do too, but all the commercial things and the services that are provided will take care of that. So we want the agencies to concentrate more on exploration and going ahead, do the pioneering stuff. So in that sense, SLS, yeah, let NASA do all that stuff with the new things, new technology. So, but in terms of providing services necessary in space, commercializing it, let the private sector take care of that. Because, you know, we have to make profits out of it.
もともとそういうもんですもんね。国の、その事業っていうのは、その採算が取れないけれども、取れないからこそ国でやりましょうっていうことですもんね。採算が取れる分は民間でやればいいっていう。
そうなんですよね。そういうふうに、あの、その役割をしっかり分担、住み分けしたいですよね。だからあのやっぱりその宇宙に行くっていうのはやっぱりさっき言ったようにやっぱりお金がすごいかかるのでそういうインフラのところはぜあのできればあの支えてほしいなと、でもそれ以外のところはもう我々の責任でリスクを取ってやるからそれができるようにその環境を整えてほしいっていうのが、
いや楽しみですね。
いや本当にあの来年もすごいいろいろある年ですね、あのアストロスケールさんも春には実証試験 の, あの衛星を1号機を打ち上げる予定ですし、まあ、あのことがうまく進めば我々のロボットも来年中に打ち上がるかもしれないので、
What do you think of some of these other advanced robots that have been developed recently and gotten a lot of attention, like the Boston Dynamics robots, and they've been acquired by SoftBank, right? And they have some pretty fancy robots that are doing like warehouse work or something, like moving boxes around.
Backflips and things like that.
Yeah, they're doing like
that's awesome,
all these crazy moves. And then there's the Asimo, robot, which I don't know what Asimo's been up to lately, but you know, it has some fine motor control, it seems like, and
he can dance.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, many robots can dance. Yeah, that's the thing. Boston Dynamics, the technology that they have or developing is amazing, truly. Yeah. Even for the guys in our office, they like watching their robots in action.
They're but, so smooth. They're the recent one, the dog thing, the movement is just really smooth.
Freaks you out, huh?
Yeah. Sort of. Scary.
But when you look for robots that actually do things physically and within the environment, it's not easy to find. And don't be fooled by the robots with the dancing and just freely moving around, because actually, you know, that's not too difficult because it's not interacting with anything. It's just moving. It's pretty fancy to see them dance like with the actual dancer and things like that. But that's all, you know, programmed movements. And when you ask for a robot, like, if you ever have a chance to visit a robot company, ask them to show you a demonstration of that robot actually doing something, doing a task. And most of them, unfortunately, won't succeed. But if you come to our office, we'll show you anytime. Anytime.
I want to come. I want to see.
But, you know, people think, I guess a classic example is you're sitting on your sofa, and you're watching, like, football game or something on TV, is sort of a cliche, and then you have the robot bring you a beer from the fridge, you know, and that's kind of like, do you guys categorize sort of, you know, the difficulty of tasks? So I would say getting a beer from the fridge is sort of like a level one, you know, can you grab a cylinder and then move it from one place to another? But then there are more difficult things like using scissors to open one of those pressed packages from Radio Shack or something, like one of those hard sealed American you know what I mean?
That's hard even for me.
Yeah, but you know, there's like what level of ability do you think your robots are currently at?
Well, we haven't actually categorized each task like difficulty or level, things like that. But
could it open a beer, or is that tab like it's too small and like I can't
open
really
a beer
do
tab? Is difficult.
That's because you have to put it in a small space.
Yeah, this one's hard because when we do it, we actually leverage with our thumb on the base of the tab, and like it's kind of a fancy move.
しかもあのタブが薄いからね、引っ掛けるのが難しいですよね。いや、本当にその人間の器用さに頼みにしてる作業っていうの結構いっぱいあって、それが何でもかんでもロボットにできるって思われるのがやっぱ辛いところなんですね。だから我々のその でもビデオを見ても、やっぱ中にはこんなもんなのっていう人もいらっしゃるんですけど、一方で、まあやっぱりそれぐらいロボットなんでもできるっていう思い込みがある方もいらっしゃるので、まあでも、そうですね。まあ興味持ってくださる方は大概驚いてくださるんですけど、まあでもやっぱりその、 ロボットができることっていうのは正直本当にまだ知れてますね。ハードウェア的にもやっぱりその人間の器用さを再現するっていうのはすごい難しいので、結構ソフトウェア的にその制御してやるっていうのはできそうな感覚はあるんですけど、やっぱりまだまだねそのハードウェアで制限されてるっていうのは現状ですね。We
have really good hardware. Oh, excellent. Like it's absolutely nuts. Because
it's, you know, interesting when you start to build humanoid robots, you have to study the human body itself to try to reproduce it into a machine.
Right.
And then you realize how like amazing the human body is. Even the muscles. This is actually the one of the most difficult parts to reproduce in a robot because these muscles have, they're not so big. But they can generate so much power, and at the same time, it's very flexible. And you could, you know, grab hard things and soft things lightly, rigidly.
Right.
And we're quite durable, too.
You know, very, very. Just repair
ourselves. And
actually, to be able to simulate a muscle, it costs, you need so much power to do it. It's almost unreasonable to have like a hand.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's
arms are just biology is on a different
level.
It's
a work of God, really.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we're like, born with them, so we don't really think much of them. But
yeah, like hands are so complex and so sophisticated. Yeah, it would be crazy if, you know, in the future, this system was so good that you could put the headset on and you could sit down at a computer and the robot could type as you type, you know what I mean? And type the same sentences.
And use a touchpad too, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Because then you would have a robot that can actually use a laptop on the ISS. And it seems like a really backward, like, what are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, that would be really cool. For some reason, I don't know why that would be cool. But
it's really interesting to hear that その環境によってやっぱり難易度が上がってしまうから、そのハウスホールド
ロボットにやってもらうっていうのが未来の人類の夢だと思ってきたけど、なかなかそれが実現しないのってなぜなんだろうと思ったけど、まあちょっとあまりにも不確定要素が多すぎるんですよね。特に家庭用ロボットになったら動物もいますし赤ちゃんもいますし、赤ちゃんの動作なんかもう予想できないじゃないですか。その中で環境も人も傷つけずに動くっていうのが求められますから、それをやろうと思ったらもうカオスですよ。無理ですよね。<laughs>
Those robots I saw in the Robocon on TV yesterday, they're huge. They're very strong, mechanical. They got sharp edges, and they're flipping these towels. And they're, they're hosted at all these towels, but the towels are dry. Right? In their contest. And I'm thinking, like, if only they used wet towels, you know, and sometimes the towel is going to be a different weight too, mm-hmm. right? So it throws off the calibration of the robot.
Mm.
So they have an official towel, official moistness of the towel. It's all controlled.
Mm-hmm.
But in real life, even just putting a, you know, hanging a towel, it's different based on how much moisture is in the towel. And so it really shows, like, there are limits for these robots. And even when you completely control all the variables, you know, in the task that it has to perform, it can barely do it, you mm-hmm. know. And it's like hanging a towel. I mean, humans are just, it's no effort at all, you know.
Yeah.
But we've been waiting for these robots that will, you know, fold our laundry and do the dishes and then clean the toilet and then walk the dog and come back. And, you know, the Betty from the Jetsons or something.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah, we're supposed to be in the 21st century, right?
Yeah, but to this day, we don't have robots that do anything except for the Roomba, right? Is that the only one?
I would believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and it's knockoffs, right?
But there was Aibo.
Yeah, but Aibo doesn't do chores.
Yes, kid.
It's more for entertainment.
Was there anything useful that Aibo did?
Yes, koto.
But it didn't actually. There wasn't actually. It couldn't, like, bring something or.
Oh no!
No.
Mm. Strange.
Like, bring me beer? No.
Yeah.
No. Well, they have robots these days that, like, collect the dishes in restaurants.
Really?
Yeah, but it doesn't collect the dishes. The people have to place the dishes on the tray table, whatever, on the robot. Yeah, so it just goes around, moves around the tables. You know, put your dish here.
Oh, so it's like a cart.
Yeah, it's like a moving automated moving cart.
Mm. That's so interesting. God.
Do you have Roomba?
Oh no, I don't.
Okay.
My wife hates these machine things.
Okay.
She prefers everything on her own. She's analog na hito. Yeah. We once bought one of those Cyclone
Soujiki,
yeah. But she hated it in the
end
because it just caused more cleaning. You know, the dust collector part. Kamibukuro wa ii.
Super old
school.
Yeah, old school. Yeah.
So it stays plugged into the wall when she vacuums.
Like, mm-hmm.
So it has a really long cable.
Yeah, long cable, kamibukuro. But in reality, you know, the more capabilities or more features you have on a machine, it causes more malfunctions and failures.
That's true.
So, you know, having something very simple do what it's designed to do is actually more robust and needs less repairs.
That's why I like the analog watch, actually.
Mm.
Instead of like Apple Watch type stuff. Charge してないともう時間が見れないみたいな。
Yeah, you have to charge everything these days.
Yeah. So less I need to charge, the better. Yeah.
When you send the final robot, would you remove some parts of the, like, certain sensors maybe you wouldn't need in the final version, or certain, like, you definitely, you guys will keep the two cameras and but when it comes time to launch this thing up, it's going to be like, well, it costs this much money to keep this part, this thing on there, and it costs this much money to keep this on there, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure it won't need everything that we have on right now. But on the other hand, I imagine it might need more because to ensure the safety of the robot so it doesn't bump into things or damage the crew. I'm sure it'll at least have more safety features on it to assure that, it, like, for example, if a crew comes into, like, within a meter of diameter from the robot, it automatically stops so it doesn't bump into the crew or things like that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. That's really cool.
It's kind of like how virtual reality now has a safe zone, you know, so the user doesn't walk into the wall or something.
Ah, okay.
So it's kind of the reverse of the safe zone in VR. So in normal VR, if the human leaves the safe zone, it like flashes and it tries to shut down the VR.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you're going to walk into a pole, you know. But this one is like it would blink if someone entered that space and freeze it there.
Yeah.
Space Terminators. Not Terminators,
we don't want that.
Okay. Yeah. We don't want that.
That's like the worst tagline.
Space Terminators.
Let's stay away from that.
Yeah. Not good for marketing.
Yeah.
No, it is really cute, right? I mean, when I'm watching the video, I was like, oh, nanka kawaiiku tsukutte.
That's my concern, you know. When you guys get closer to launching this thing, it's like, hey, this thing's going to be, you know, there's going to be Space Terminator headlines and stuff. You guys have to make this thing
way cuter.
Paint
it pink.
You guys would have to cover the body in some way, maybe, to make it safer.
Yeah. Well, definitely cover it in some kind of material. So even if the crew does bump into it, they won't get hurt by it. Yeah.
So it's going to be what, fluffy?
Well, sort of, yeah.
Have you guys decided on like a face or like what it's going to look like?
Yeah, is it going to have a face?
Well,
it has a head, right?
So. It has a head, but yeah, we're thinking of painting it red so it moves 3 times faster.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's a really scary space. Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, but color, yeah. We, you know...
Like, would it have a face, or is it just going to be like the cameras and sort of the... It looks very exposed right now.
Yeah, it is. Right.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that affects, you know, maybe it could be more susceptible to being damaged, you know, without some sort of a cover on it. But once you put a cover over that thing's face, it's going to start to look like...
Something, yeah.
Something, yeah. Right?
Yeah, of course, we want to... we're not... concentrating at all on the commercial side right now, so we're just building it as it looks like.
Right.
But eventually, when we send it, when we expose the robot more to the public, we're gonna have to design it so it looks more sexy, you know.
Yeah.
And definitely, even when we send it up to space, you know, we want the people to see and recognize it as a cool robot.
Right.
So we will put more. On design and things like that.
確かに. I guess it's really easy for robots to look scary. Right?
Yeah. Well, he's saying they're going to put like spider legs on this thing and stuff. It's going to be terrifying. you know, so.
I think it needs to have fur.
Yeah.
As long as it's furry.
It's going to end up with some like teddy bear head on there, like, really friendly look. That's what they did with the I went to C-Tech like a few years ago and I saw the robotics that some companies were developing for Kaigo to help people get into bed and stuff.
Mm.
And it was a super jacked robot. I mean, it had huge arms. I mean, it had to lift people, right? And it would, but its head was just this teddy bear head, like sono mama, like stuck on this super jacked robot torso.
多分そう考えるとチョイスがないんですよね、きっと。その、なんだろう、人間っぽくするとやっぱ怖くなっちゃうし、ロボットのままでも怖いし、って考えるとやっぱりテディベアが一番。
it was still scary though. It was the scariest teddy bear I've ever seen.
でもやっぱ安心感を与えるっていう意味では、一番手っ取り早いといえば手っ取り早いオプションではありますよね、きっと。その人間の顔とかになると、そのUncanny Valley みたいな問題が出てきちゃうしとか。Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of problems. If you leave it the way it is, it's like it looks like a Terminator. And if you make it human-like, it's the uncanny. Like, what is this creepy?
Yeah.
だからやっぱテディベアしかないよ。
Put Buscemi's face on there.
Yeah, it's.
まあ日本に限って言えばガンダムっぽく見せたら。
確かに確かに。そうですね。
日本人はすごい親しみ感じてる。
確かに。
That would be the way to go, maybe.
エヴァンゲリオンとかガンダムとかね。
Yeah.
お台場にねありますよね、ガンダム。
ありますね。
My son is like mesmerized.
By the Gundam?
Yeah, like その、あの大きいやつね、見ると。He's like, wow! Gets excited. まあ大きいから、単に大きいからかもしれない。
That one doesn't move, does it?
It なんか時間によってあの光ったりとか、
yeah, it just lights up and things like that.
あの目のとことかがチカチカしたり、あの音が出たりするの。
Imagine that with a teddy bear head.
Yeah, maybe no, no lights are necessary with a teddy bear, but yeah. あ、でもガンダムみたいな見た目のやつがスペースで動いてるとかめっちゃかっこいいですよね。
いや、それはもうね。
ね、夢ですよね。
もうあの、やっぱ会社の人間もね、みんなあの、中二病にかかってるやつがありますから、はい。やっぱそういうのが好きなんで、だから白く塗るか赤く塗るかっていう議論になっちゃいます。
楽しそう。いいね。
Yeah, Gundam in space.
会社の人の年齢は結構若めですか？
若いですね。僕は今圧倒的に一番年上で、ほんで今多分平均年齢30前半ですね。
なるほど。
いや、それが本当にそのもう世界レベルで一級のそのエンジニアなんで、もうなんか驚いちゃいますよね。みんなめちゃくちゃ優秀だなって、もびっくりしちゃいますね。あ、すごいなって。それで、かつて、シャフトっていう二足歩行ロボットの会社があったんですね。その会社は、まあ、二足歩行ロボットを作ってて、DARPA ロボット X チャレンジっていう、そういう大会があったんですけど、その予選でぶっちぎりの1位だったんですよ。で、その後、その会社が、Google に買収されて、もう日本の会社なんですよね、それ。で、Google に買収されて、その後、まあ、アンディ・ルーミンっていう、そのロボットが好きな方がいらっしゃって、その方が主導して、そのロボット部分が、秘密裏にあったんですね、Google の中に。まあ、でもその方がちょっと失脚しちゃって、ほんでその、まあ、ゆくゆくは結局その Google ももういいやっていうなっちゃって、去年の末にそのロボット部門が解散しちゃったんですね。で、その時にその社長さんが次何にしようかっていうことで、その情報、解散したって情報をつかんだうちの社長が、参考の例で迎え入れて、その元、シャフトっていう会社の、ファウンダー CEO、あともう一人そのシャフトでいたソフトウェアエンジニアも今議体にいてですね、まあ彼らなんかもともとね、プロ野球選手みたいな給料をもらってたのに、今はなんか何分の1かなっていうレベルだと思いますけど、
趣味みたいな、
いや、だから本当にロボットを愛してるんですよね。
Right, they don't have to work, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
They probably have earned enough that they can just live their life.
They just want to do this, right? That's the best, right?
Gita has received some funding recently.
Yes, we have. We closed our Series A round and we collected $4.1 million.
It's not best dollars, yeah. These robots should be looking pretty fancy.
But of course, you know, it costs a good amount of money to make these robots.
Yeah,
too, so yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. Well, anything that's innovative and, you know, state of the art is going to...You're going to do things that you're going to spend money on things that don't work too, you know, in the learning process. So.
Yeah. And, you know, trying to build new things, it just causes the basic concept in a company is scrap and build. So we just continually try to build something new, try things. Yeah, so, yeah, there's lots of investment involved in trying to find the best answer.
Right now, most you'd say the one of the biggest challenges is the hardware and the servo's precision to match the software mapping. So the software side and the tracking of the operator and those things are quite a bit more precise than the hardware side.
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Yeah. Because if we really wanted to imitate human motion, it comes down to the hardware, how flexible or how precise the motors or whatever you use to imitate the motions.
Yeah.
It's absolutely mind-blowing stuff. Are you guys going to be producing media about like videos of... It would be nice to see it side by side, you know, the operator there and the robot and just sort of, you know, you can see them mirroring each other and like,
yeah.
You know, there are some videos that we show to our investors or the customers that we have. It's just not on YouTube or whatever. I think. Yeah, maybe we should upload that stuff to YouTube too. Yeah.
Get some really awesome people love watching robots and them doing things like this. Like,
yeah, it's fun.
It's really cool.
We'll definitely share the YouTube channel link with our listeners.
Oh, awesome. That'll be great. Yeah,
sure. Yeah.
Then we have to upload a few more things on there.
でもすごいシンプルですもんね。今、そのなんかビデオの説明とかもあんまないみたいな。あ、そうですね。
はい。だから。
And the one you is on your website is the ISS sort of robot substitute experiment, right?
And that's one we took in last December at Jackson's facility. So it's rather old.
And
the robot got so much better after that. Yeah.
Does it look the same, more or less?
It looks more complicated. It has more sensors on it. Yeah.
I want to see. Okay.
それじゃ出たらみんなにシェアしよう。オペレーターと並んで動いてる。はい。そうですね。
Yeah, and then it makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's
いい フィードバックありがとうございます.
Yeah, and it's the avatar concept. So people, the general public, I think, is familiar with like the avatar concept, and this is like a space avatar.
Yeah.
And actually, there's another XPRIZE contest called the ANA Avatar XPRIZE.
Wow.
So it's on avatars.
Really?
Oh. Yeah, and we're competing in it right now.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Wow.
And it's funded by ANA.
Oh, wow. What happens if you win?
There's a big prize, money, yeah, involved. Big prize, yeah.
Are you going to win?
We think we will. Yeah. But current situation, it seems that the XPRIZE is more... They're looking for technology that could really, reproduce, like, make the operator and the recipient feel like the person's there. So it's not exactly what we're concentrating on, right? You know, trying to get the job done.
Right.
So it's focused on something not exactly what we're doing. So we're not really sure how far we can get there.
So they're emphasizing the experience of the operator.
Exactly, the experience of the operator and the recipient.
どう感じるかとかですね。そういう感覚に訴えることの方により集中してるんじゃないかっていう印象を受けるので。なるほど。Well, maybe...
Maybe you guys could bring something unique to that.
Yeah, we're trying to. We're trying to. Actually, the rules and are still on the board, so we're trying to persuade the judges that maybe it's more better to make the competition a little bit more focused on getting the tasks done. Because in the end, when you have an avatar, what you want to do is. Yeah, the experience is very important, but also being able to actually, interact with the environment remotely. That's one of the objects of the avatar. So in order to do that, you have to be able to move around and do things, interact with the environment.
What sort of tasks would they require you to do? Like open doors or like knitting?
まだきっちりとは決まってないっていう状況ですね。こういうのを求めるかもしれないっていう。For example っていう感じで or they're asking things like being able to talk with the recipient is one thing. Yeah.
I see.
And making the recipient feel like that person is really actually interacting with the operator.
So that would need like the eyebrows and like
maybe
yeah, but a teddy bear head. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, なんか宣伝することってあります？プラスで採用してますとか。
What should people listening to this do?
そうですね。そういう意味で採用っていう意味では、CO を的な、はい、その administrative work とか本当にきっちり、バッチリできる人っていうのを、まあ、かつ、その人がファイナンシャルもいろいろできるんだったら、そういうスーパーマンが欲しいっていうのは、
スーパーマンいたらぜひ議体まで連絡してください、はい、あのビデオとかは一緒に SNS のポストにリンクを貼りますので、
ありがとうございます。
ぜひチェックして。
The stuff is so cool. I can't believe, you know, it's like a real
job.
It's a real, you know, this yeah, is like, it's, cool. it's not a, it's not, it's not a NASA project. You know, it's this real commercial effort to put like robots and automation and of manufacturing and stuff into space. And it's like, it's totally key to the whole space thing. You know, that this works out.
That's so, what we're believing in.
Too. Yeah, yeah, I believe that too. So,
thank you so much.
No, thank you for having me.
またぜひ来てください。
ありがとうございます。またお呼びください。
Bye.
Bye bye. Thank you.